This week on The Big Show, acting royalty John David Washington stops by to talk about his lead role in the latest Spike Lee joint, Black Klansman. Plus, the founders of the Martha's Vineyard's African American Film Festival, Stephanie and Floyd Rance, will be our special guests to talk about the 16th annual film retreat in Oak Bluffs. In addition, we'll have entertainment news and reviews of the latest films, including The Spy Who Dumped Me and Christopher Robin, on the latest episode of Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. Let's go. Episode of The Big Show, Keeping It Real with Film Gordon. I am Tim Gordon. We have an action-packed show today. As you heard in the opening, John David Washington, or J.D. Washington, will stop by. For those who are uninformed, of course, that's the son of Denzel Washington, who is making his own way, so I probably will not reference the D word again because he's really trying to shy away and be his own man. Also coming up on the show today, the Martha's Vineyards Film Festival kicks off next week, and the founders, Stephanie and Floyd Nance, are going to stop by and talk to audiences and tell them what to expect. That's going to happen out on the vineyard next week at their film festival. Also coming up this week, we've got a couple of movies, and I'm really anxious to talk about one of them. So you want to stick around for that as well. And Wilson Morales will be with us momentarily to let us know what's going on this week in entertainment. Wilson, how are you this week, my friend?
I'm doing good. August is, a slow month. We're getting what, in a way, you call dump city in terms of film.
Yes, we are.
You know, where you're like, you're going there and then you see these movies and you walk out of there, blah, what's on TV?
You are correct, sir. You are correct. So with that being said, what is actually happening this week, if anything, in film, man, or entertainment?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, in films, you know, you got a bunch of films coming out this week that no one's really talking about. You know, I guess with some of these movies, the embargo is so late that I guess they want to make some money before anybody starts reading any reviews. You have Christopher Robin, which embargo doesn't get released till the Thursday before, actually the Thursday as it opens up in some theaters. Then you have Darkest Minds, which seems like, according to the trailer, something we've seen before in the past. So what are they offering you? I'm trying to think what else is coming out. You know, everything's so small. I think, you know, everybody waits till the big blockbusters are over, you know, the franchises, and then they wait till August. Usually there'll be a film or two that pops. You know, in the past, we've had The Help, we've had The Butler, you know, we've had, obviously, Guardians of the Galaxy. So we don't know what is going to be the surprise hit of August. I'm assuming there's at least one or two. Hopefully, maybe it could be Black Klansman.
Well, you know, you got Black Klansman, and I think Black Klansman is right smack dab in that weekend that, you know, you mentioned The Help, and you mentioned a couple other African-American titles that have been released. Traditionally, this is a good time to drop these kinds of titles, and Black Klansman, you and I both had an opportunity to see it, I think is a film that will really play well late in the summer, as you said, when we're in the middle of Dump City. The studios, I don't know, and I don't understand why people don't really look at the calendar the way film critics look at the calendar. I mean, you and I talk about this either on this show, and then we talk about it offline as well, about how the calendar is constructed every year, that, you know, it traditionally January through probably mid to late April is usually a time that now we're starting to see with superhero films coming in that they found that it could be profitable to play a Batman versus Superman, Black Panther, some of these Marvel titles that work during those time periods, man. But I don't know why we haven't solved the riddle of August, man. August just seems to be a month, man, where really traditionally nothing really good comes out of August, man.
Well, I think, you know, during the heart of the summer is when kids are starting to come out of school. And then once you get into August, some kids start going back to school, you know, whether it's colleges or, you know, depending on where the states they are in, you know, so you lose a little bit of terms of the profit you can make. And I think people want to relax before they start getting back into the fall. You know, once you hit the fall, then you have, you know, the major film festivals coming up. People start talking about quality films that they're looking to see towards the end of the year. There's no rhyme or riddle as far as, you know, why certain films get released in August. You know, it's like you either want to stay away from the June and July blockbusters because you want to make at least a dent, as opposed to, you know, getting so trashed at the box office, you can't come up for air.
Yeah, no, I got you, man. And I mean, starting the end of this month going into September, you're absolutely right, man. I mean, you're on what I call late award season overdrive. I mean, it kind of starts next month in Toronto and, you know, either later this month at Telluride. The L.A. Film Fest released their schedule, so they're trying to get in on the back end of the award game. You've got other major festivals. Middleburg is coming up in a couple of months. So, and then we're off and running, you know, when all of the movies have been released at these festivals. It's going to be time for your critics group, my critics group, and groups that we belong to weigh in and kind of, you know, set the temperature for what the award season is going to be.
Yeah, you know, we've got time, and then in between that, we have these films in August that, you know, we have to see and talk about because there are still films, and, you know, you have Slender Man, which is coming up at some point, directed by Sylvain White, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. He did Stomp the Yard. You have Alpha, which seemed like an interesting trailer. I'm interested in seeing that. It's the first film directed by Albert Hughes, who's the brother of the Hughes brothers, Alan. You know, they did Menace to Society and Dead Presidents. So, you know, you have a couple of films directed. You actually have three films when you think about when you throw in Spike Lee. Three films directed by so far that I'm aware of, black directors.
Yeah, man. So question, man, you know, did you have any thoughts, man? Because you heard me open the show, as you know, because I've always been a film historian and love the history of the film business. And 20th Century Fox going away is huge, man. I mean, that's a studio that once upon a time had Cleopatra. It had Titanic. You had stars like Marilyn Monroe in those films, Shirley Temple. There's a lot of talent. Elizabeth Taylor that came through 20th Century Fox, man. Any thoughts on that studio going bye-bye and being absorbed by Disney?
You know, the thing is, it's no different than banking world in a way when you had Chase and JP Morgan and they all gobbled up each other. Right. And then film world, you know, over the years, you know, you've had like Gramercy and Polygram and, you know, other films. Like, granted, 20th Century was once one of the top three, top five, top seven,
yeah,
to a point where, like, okay, it's just like anything else in business, it itself get gobbled up. It's a Disney. You know, with Disney churning out billions of dollars between their Marvel films and their Pixar films and their animated films, it's hard for other studios to catch up.
Yeah,
unless you're producing tentpole films.
Yeah, man, and the thing that about 20th Century Fox, and you named a lot of the smaller production companies that we saw go bye-bye in the 90s, 20th Century Fox was a major, man. I mean, you're talking about Universal, you're talking about, you know, Disney, you're talking about like a major studio. So it would be akin to like if we were talking about in the banking world, if like Bank of America went away, or if like a national brand. So it's huge, man, and I mean, it's a huge part of history in the business, man, that I hate to see these sorts of things happen. I'm happy, as I said at the outset, for one genre of films, man. But damn, and thinking about that, I might have to actually sit down and pin my thoughts about that and put it on my blog from a historic standpoint.
Well, yeah, you know, obviously for those of us in this business who think of it from that perspective, yes. Obviously, to the average audience, you know, they don't really pay no mind, especially nowadays. We have so many channels, you know, between Hulu and Netflix and right. Own, you know, These days, you say to yourself, Paramount, Disney, basically you get lost in the shuffle that, like, Fox is still going to have their TV division and have some sort of name brand, but in terms of the film world, no one comes out, like, you say Top Gun is coming out back again. No one's paying attention as that was a Paramount film. People forget that the Star Wars film started out at Fox before Disney took it over.
Right. I mean, so, and before we continue, I'm online with Wilson Morales, who's editor-in-chief of blackfilm.com. Wilson, as we are sitting here in the middle of August and, we're having this conversation and we've been having it, when you're coming on the last couple of weeks about we're at a particular time of year. There's not a lot to look forward to on in the film side. You didn't mention Crazy Rich Asians, which is also going to be a huge August film. But talk a little bit. Have you had an opportunity to check out the rebirth of shows that are on cable now? Queen Sugar is kind of rolling along right now. Power last week with the star power of Kendrick Lamar doing his thing. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to say, so when you're not doing well in theater, the movies, the films, obviously there's a lot of good stuff on TV, Queen Sugar, you have Power, Insecure is coming back on, you've got Jack Ryan coming out at the end of the month, you've got Condor, which was recently released, you've got a slew of films, a slew of TV shows, whether it's Hulu, Amazon, Castle Rock is coming up on things on Amazon or Hulu, one of those channels, a slew of programming that, like, people are not going to the movies anymore. You see what's going on, and I have a movie pass, and I haven't gone into that whole dilemma, what's happening there. So there are a lot more options of people to be entertained, if not the movie business.
No, I agree with you, man. I agree with you. I mean, I guess we just have to ride it out, man. It's not like, this season's going to last like a couple of months, man. I think we'll be good to go once we get past August. I think Black Klansman, I'm really anxious and hopeful that that's a movie, man, that people will agree that, for me, it's like a comeback film for Spike. And I think it ties in with the national conversation politically where we are. I'm just happy for John David Washington, man, because, it can't be hard, Wilson, having your dad be Denzel Washington. It just can't. And you being in the same profession, can't be.
Well, everybody's done it. Gwyneth Paltrow, you've had plenty of kids. Obviously, Denzel's as high as he is. And, and it takes some time before people find their own footing. Tracy Ellis Ross had to go through it, obviously at some point. He's getting it early as opposed to his fifth or sixth project.
Yeah, no, you're right. All right, Wilson, so I'm getting ready to get out of here right now, man. But before we go, man, let people know where they can follow you and read your content.
You can find my stuff over at blackfoot.com, which is the same words you use for Twitter and Instagram.
Wilson, as always, brother, thank you for the insight, man. It's a pleasure to have you on, man.
I'll be back next time.
You will, sir. You take care, man. Enjoy your weekend.
Take care.
All right. And of course, that was my friend and colleague, Wilson Morales from blackfilm.com. He joins us at the top of every show. You guys keep it where you got it. We're coming back on the other side and we want to have a conversation with the founders of the Martha's Vineyard African-American Film Festival. And that's Stephanie and Floyd Nance. You guys keep it where you got it. You're listening to The Big Show here at 96.3 HD4. That's DCRadio.gov. And we'll be right back. Cause ain't no telling if something might pop tonight. Welcome back to the show. Coming up later on, we're going to review both Christopher Robin and The Spy Who Dumped Me. Our next guest founded summer's finest festival, the Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival, which kicks off on Monday, August the 6th in Oak Bluffs, Massachusetts. I'd like to welcome the founders of the fest. I know we've got Floyd Rance, I'm not sure if we have Stephanie as well. Do we just have Floyd?
I'm here.
We do have Stephanie and Floyd. Rance, welcome. How are both of you guys doing today?
We're doing great, brother. We're doing great. Yeah.
All right, man. We're almost there. We're a couple of days away. Yeah. 16th
That's
annual
right.
festival is kicking off, man. How you guys feeling about it right now?
We're excited. We're really excited and looking forward to it.
All righty. Well, I just want to talk a little bit about the lineup. I just went through it. Do you want me to talk about it, or you guys want to talk about it in your own special way?
No, you go for it, and I'll piggyback on top of what you said.
All right. So it looks like you guys have 65 original features, documentaries, and shorts. I've looked at some of your festival highlights, which includes Spike Lee's BlacKkKlansman, The United States of America. Plus, you guys are going to have special screenings of The Hate U Give, The Bobby Brown Story, Maynard, Mr. Soul, as well as screenings of Greenleaf, This Is Us, and Insecure. Great slate that you guys have, man. Talk a little bit about some of your highlights, and what should people be looking forward to at your festival this year?
Well, as you mentioned, we have a myriad of different films from a myriad of different genres. We got feature films, we got some episodic TV. But what's also interesting in this year is that in addition to the full-length screenings, we have what we're calling clips and conversations. So, for example, with BlacKkKlansman, that will be a clips and conversation scenario, as well as the Love Is with Amara Brock-Akil. That will be clips and conversation. Greenleaf will be, they'll show the entire episode, as well as Insecure, they'll show the entire episode. So we have a lot of guests and a lot of different genres and formats that we're putting on display this week.
Stephanie?
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. We're really excited about it. It's going to be, we're really proud and happy with the festival. You know, Floyd and I have been doing this for a long time. It's a labor of love, but 16 years is a great accomplishment, and we're super excited about the lineup.
All right, so for folks who generally are people, I know people have been coming specifically for this event. How has it grown, and what have you guys learned over the course of the 16 years from year one to where you are now with the fest?
Oh, it's grown exponentially. It's bursting at the seams, and we're really blessed to have this opportunity. I mean, when we started out in Vineyard Haven, in two small conference rooms in the Mansion House, and now we're over in Oak Bluff at the Performing Arts Center, which is a 750-plus screening theater. The attendance has grown exponentially. We got people coming from as far as California, Texas, Florida, Colorado, all over the U.S. We have some international guests as well. It's just grown in every way you can think of. And one thing we've learned is that hard work pays off for sure.
No, I would agree with you. And you know, I met both of you guys at your kickoff event that you had here, I think last month or earlier this month. I'm not sure. Time just starts to fly.
But that was June.
That was June. Yeah, okay. So it was last month. Thank you. Or the month before last. So I had a chance to meet both of you and kind of just watch what you guys were building. How did that event, looking back on the time that you spent here in our local area, kind of introducing the festival for people who hadn't had the opportunity to come to the Vineyards to check it out, how did that experience work as well as you kind of expand what you guys are doing with your programming?
Well, that was the first year of the Color of Conversation in Silver Springs, Maryland. It worked very well because we had been toying with that for a few years prior in different genres and in smaller venues. So that was a perfect opportunity. We've always been looking for that opportunity, and it kind of just happened like a lot of things via osmosis.
Wow.
And as you termed it, as a kickoff event, it's an excellent kickoff event and an excellent venue. In one of my favorite cities, which is D.C.
Absolutely, man. We enjoyed having both of you guys out here with the family, man. It was a lot of fun that weekend.
Indeed, yep. Indeed.
All right, so I'm looking through this, man. So you talked about clips and conversations, and I was looking through this. So Black Klansman, which is going to actually open later that week, so you guys are going to give people a sneak peek and have Spike kind of share his vision of what he's doing. I know people are really looking forward to that event.
Yes, sir. It's sold out.
Yeah, I was reading it right here. I'm like, wow. Nice.
Yeah, that's a great way to kick off the festival. And Mr. Lee has done that in the past. He did it last year with She's Gotta Have It. He had the large majority of the cast here. And, you know, it was really like a talk show format with him as the host. He shows a clip, and then he goes into some conversation with his guests. And then he goes into another clip and then more conversation. It's very, very nice, very, very relaxed. You see the funniest side of Mr. Lee, and it's nice. It's nice. We're honored to have him.
All right, I'm online with Stephanie and Floyd Rance from the Martha's Vineyards African American Film Festival, as I said, which kicks off on Monday, August the 6th. One of the other screening and discussions that you guys are going to do or have at the festival, which I found to be really interesting, was Dream Hampton moderating a discussion with activist and the founder of the Me Too movement, Tarana Burke. Talk about how that made its way into the festival.
So we've collaborated with Color of Change, the progressive organization led by Rashad Robinson. We love him and his team, and they approached us about dealing with something proactive in the climate that we're in now. And I had connected with Tarana Burke previously, and she's a lovely woman, and she's definitely dedicated, committed to the cause. So I thought it'd be an amazing opportunity to marry the two organizations together. And Color of Change was really excited about this. So we're going to have Tarana Burke. And then what happened that was great was that American Heart Association came on board, because their platform that they're pushing this year is that, you know, social injustice affects your health as well. And that really goes in with the whole Me Too movement. So American Heart Association brought is bringing Tarana Burke to Martha's Vineyard, to the film festival. We're going to have this great discussion about it. And then prior to that, American Heart Association really wants to partner with a lot of our filmmakers and offer them opportunities to tell empowered stories. So they're going to pick a winner and give them $5,000 to talk about how they or someone they know is improving their community. And the example would be, you know, gardens in you know, in Harlem or somewhere in Brooklyn, the crisis in Flint, Michigan with water. Like, how are they helping to make their community better? So it's going to be a great activation. So we're honored that American Heart Association and Color of Change are doing this with us.
Well, it sounds like it is going to be a wonderful, wonderful discussion that you guys are going to have. Also, I wanted to spotlight United Skates, a documentary that I know that played at the Sundance Film Fest that I didn't get an opportunity to see, but has really been amping it up on the festival circuit. I'm really excited you guys have that film. You've had an opportunity to check it out. What do you think that film or the audiences will get from that story?
It's a great piece. I mean, it brings back a lot of memories, especially for folks in our age group. It's obviously, it basically is about a dying art form and dying venues, which are roller skating rings across America. I don't want to, you know, give the movie away, but obviously people know that there's like a soul night or a black night at these roller skating rings. And this is where all the skaters come out and get into some tricks and have fun. And it's a way of the community coming together and bonding. But unfortunately, these venues are really big, and the owners haven't found ways to leverage the space. And so they're losing their properties to, you know, just to taxes. And so the people who this community of skaters in every state pretty much has this community of skaters. They've begun to travel the country and have these kind of annual skate festivals, basically, in different cities. So that's basically what it's about. But it's a great piece. I think it was at Tribeca. I'm not sure that it was at.
Right. It probably, I think it did. I apologize because I see so many films between these festivals. I get confused where I've seen what or what played where. So you're absolutely right. It was Tribeca. It wasn't Sundance. Thank you for that.
Right, yeah, I didn't see it at Tribeca, but I think it won at Tribeca. It won some award at Tribeca. But we're honored, as always, to have them on board as well. And we look forward to their screening. But it's a great documentary. It's a really fun documentary. And also the one on line dancing, which is I think it's called J&J Soul Line Dancing, is a highly anticipated project that folks are looking forward to as well.
Right, I see that as well. Now,
that played in D.C. too. We showed that in D.C.
Oh, okay, yeah, and I didn't get an opportunity to see it when it was here. So, do you have a couple of other stories or a couple of other filmmakers who are friends of mine who have films in your festival who both have documentaries that are really personal stories about their fathers? Of course, Mr. Mm-hmm. Soul is one, and the other is Maya Washington's documentary. I always mess the title up. Through the Banks of the Red Cedar.
You got it right.
Yeah, well, I had to go and study it and look because I didn't want to mess it up. But you've got both these young ladies who I think are really interesting storytellers. What was it about both those films that kind of stand out to you, and why would you want those included in your lineup?
Well, Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, I'm like a football geek, so that's a no-brainer. And it's a great, as you mentioned, a father-daughter story, and I have a daughter as well. So again, it's a no-brainer, and it's a perfect fit. And she's a USC grad, and they have a space in my heart. So it's a no-brainer. And Mr. Soul is just phenomenal piece about a gentleman I wish I had an opportunity to meet, Ellis Hazlett. Everybody should have known Ellis Hazlett if they had that opportunity. And that's just a great piece. She had that piece, Melissa Hazlett is who we're talking about. She had that here about 6 years ago when it was only 30 minutes long. And it was phenomenal. It blew us all the way then. So again, those two pieces are in the no-brainer category.
Yeah, I actually remembered having a conversation with her probably 2 or 3 years ago, and I guess she was crowdfunding at that point, and gave her money for that. I thought it was a great idea and a great concept, and have known her for a minute. Really, really good sister, man. So I hope audiences really get something out of both those stories. And as you said, they are both really personal stories. And I think that, they're no-brainers. I agree with you 100% on that. I want to transition and pivot to another conversation that you're having with director George Tillman and his film The Hate U Give, which is highly anticipated when it's going to come out and drop in theaters later this fall. But you're going to give people a sneak peek at the Vineyard. You've had an opportunity, I'm assuming, to have seen some of these clips. So what are you anticipating audiences will get from this conversation with Mr. Tillman?
What's really interesting about this film is that people have read the book and they're really excited to see what George does, like how he interprets it and brings it to screen. I think it's going to be phenomenal. You know, Fox has been a partner of ours in the past. We are, again, honored that they wanted to bring this to life on Martha's Vineyard. It's going to be great. It really is.
Well, you know, like I said, I have a lot of respect for George Tillman. I've watched mostly all of the films that he's made over time, and he's done a really good job. He kind of stays under the radar. He's not as out there as a lot of African-American directors, man. But the stories that he does choose to tell, I think, are really, really powerful. And The Hate U Give As I say, I keep talking about it being highly anticipated. It's a film that I may get an opportunity to see next month in Toronto at that film festival, but it's something that I'm eagerly looking forward to seeing. So if you guys have some insight off camera, we can talk. Or offline, we can talk, because I want to know.
Yeah. Now, they haven't shown us anything as of yet. I'm looking forward to seeing it as well.
And then
one more thing, Tim.
Oh, go ahead.
But before you go on, Mr. Soul, so Blair Underwood, the actor, is one of the executive producers on Mr. Soul, and he will be on Island as well.
Nice.
So we're really excited that he'll be there to have a conversation with Melissa, who's a dear friend of ours.
Well, you know, Blair Underwood holds a distinction of having the exact same birthday I have, except he's 1 year younger. So I always look at him and feel like I'm underachieving in life. I'm like, damn, what's I should be doing so much more with my life. But also, I see you guys are playing the BET Presents the Bobby Brown Story. And this is another one that I'm really interested in what they're going to do. I worked at BET a couple of times, and I remember how stunned I was when the New Edition story came out. And no disrespect to BET. I was like, this clearly doesn't look like a BET property. And they're using it. It didn't. I can say that because I worked there. But the Bobby Brown story, I'm hoping that they're able to catch lightning in a bottle once again. Have you guys had an opportunity to see this? And if you have, don't tell the audience if it's good or not, but just did they capture the same rhythm and tone of the New Edition story?
Absolutely, Tim. Absolutely. I can't let anything out of the bottle, but I'll tell you absolutely.
All right, well, okay, that's another must-see, man. Will anybody from the cast be on the island for the premiere of this?
Yes. Woody McClain, who was played Bobby in the original with the New Edition story, he'll be here. And his love interest, who plays Whitney, and I do apologize, I don't remember her name offhand.
Hey, neither do I. I mean, so both of them will be there to kind of to talk about the film and be there for the premiere for the cast.
Yes. We're showing the first. It's a two-night event, but we're only showing the first night.
Very nice, man. Well, you know, always, as they say, always leave him wanting more.
That's right. And he's from Roxbury, but we're probably 2 hours from where he grew up, I guess.
Oh, so it's almost like a homecoming for him.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he's going to be here or not, but the actor, Woody McClain, will definitely be here.
Oh, man, that's going to be hot. Now, once again, I'm online with the founders of the Martha's Vineyard African-American Film Festival, Stephanie and Floyd Rantz, and we're going through their lineup for their 16th annual festival. Maynard is going to be playing again, and a good friend of mine, Dolly Turner, is one of the producers on this thing. I have not had an opportunity to see this, but I realize that she has had this thing out there, and the story of Atlanta's first black mayor. You guys, of course, have had an opportunity to see this. Again, I think it's another high-profile title that I think will resonate well at your festival.
Oh, absolutely. That is definitely our crowd. It's an amazing documentary. They did his son and the wife did a really good job in bringing this story to life. They're great people, there's a huge surge for this film. People are really excited about it. And we, after the conversation, we have Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms is going to be part of the talk back, as is Vernon Jordan. So we're very, very excited about this. So it's going to be amazing.
So y'all bringing Atlanta to the Vineyard, huh, for a couple of hours?
you know, what's interesting, Tim, is that not only is it Atlanta, but there's Chicago. Obviously, New York's always in the house. You know, Jersey, L.A. It just goes on and on. It grows and grows every year.
Well, man, you know, you guys are doing some amazing work, but I still got a couple more titles. We're not done.
Okay.
I understand that Greenleaf is making an appearance this year, man. I mean, another show that I like that's over on OWN. And you also have Love Is. Am I correct?
Yes, you are absolutely correct.
Okay.
We have two OWN products, Greenleaf and Love Is. Greenleaf, I'm not familiar with Greenleaf, but I understand it is a highly anticipated episode that we're going to watch. And Lynn Whitfield will be in the house as well.
Well, man, you haven't been watching Greenleaf, man. Shame on you, man. Come on, man. Greenleaf Greenleaf is a part of that arm at OWN, man. Because, you know, I started to tease you, but see, I'm not going to get anybody in trouble because if we're going through OWN programming, there's some other OWN programming that you could have put on. What happened? We just keep
it. Not my call.
70 is like, don't say it. Don't say it.
Yeah, it's not my call. They could bring the whole OWN programming department to our event, but no, that wasn't my call. And they're just testing us out. They've heard good things.
Well, I'm not mad at you. So, and I'm going to leave OWN alone because I think OWN has some really good shows on it. And Queen Sugar's another one. Unfortunately, I think they're too deep in their season for them to bring anything through. They could have brought the season finale by. That would have been sexy for you guys. Okay. But I'm just throwing out ideas for you guys. You could have pitched them that.
Queen Sugar, the timing wasn't right for Queen Sugar.
Yeah.
But for Greenleaf, we're showing the premiere episode of the next season, so we're really excited about this. A lot of our attendees are huge Greenleaf fans. I watch Greenleaf. It's a great show. My mom watches it, and she cannot wait to see Rick Fox.
I watch it as well, so the only person that doesn't watch it is Floyd. Floyd, you got to step your Greenleaf game up.
I can't watch everything, Tim.
I feel you. So finally, you guys have Insecure, and I think this is the first episode of season 3 that you guys are going to premiere.
Yes, that is the first episode of season 3. 3 is the magic number.
Oh man, and that's another highly anticipated. So you've got some really strong kind of debuts, you know, season kickoffs that I think will work really well at the festival. Really good job from the both of you in the programming and the selecting of the content that you guys are going to feature next week.
Thank you, brother. We appreciate it. We're honored to have all our guests next week.
But tell people who are interested in attending, give them some information on Martha's Vineyard's African American Film Festival.
Sure. They can reach us via our website at mvaaff.com. That's just an acronym for Martha's Vineyard African American Film Festival. They can see us on Facebook at Martha's Vineyard AA Film Festival.
All right.
On Facebook. We're on Instagram.
MVAAFF.
Right. MVAAFF.
Hey, as always, it is a pleasure. I can't wait to see you guys again and continue success on everything that you guys are doing in your 16th year. You truly are summer's finest festival.
Thank you, brother.
Oh, thank you.
Appreciate it.
All right, you guys take care, man, and we'll be in touch.
All right, God bless.
All right, you as well. Take care.
Hey, I am your lovely Misty Stone, and you are listening to The Big Show. Keeping it real with Film Gordon, baby.
Show. Now, earlier this week, I sat down with the star of the upcoming Spike Lee drama BlacKkKlansman, John David Washington, the son of iconic award-winning actor, director, producer Denzel Washington. J.D. Washington is trying to carve his own path from the gigantic shadow cast from his famous father. One of four films that he appears in this year, Washington commands the screen in Lee's spirited racial drama. We discuss the challenges of navigating with such a famous last name, the perseverance it takes to survive, and why he doesn't like the comparisons between his character's voice and that of Boots Riley. Sorry to bother you. Here's our conversation.
Yeah, what's going on?
JD?
JD's easy.
All right, cool. Yeah. Sir, saw the film, but I've seen three of you. I've seen, this is the third film I've seen from you this year. I was at Sundance.
Oh,
I saw
cool.
Monsters and Men, and all I saw right. you and Monster as well.
Oh, man. Oh, awesome, man.
Got Old Man and the Gun coming.
Yeah. It's exciting. Exciting time. I put a lot of work in, man. It's crazy to see. Like the timing, I didn't know it was going to be like this, but as far as the release dates, but it's been great.
You know, man, you ain't got to make all the money, man.
I'm not. What do you mean make all the money? Those are, you know, those are Sundance films. You know, I don't know how it works, but...
They're going to get picked up.
That's for the craft, those films.
You know, they're not only for the craft, but, you know, you got some award positioning, man. This is a film that's going to be award position. Oh, I know.
I don't go into the films thinking that. I just think these are great stories, and, again, these directors I get to work with, it's phenomenal. So I'm blessed.
Right. All right, so let's talk a little bit about BlacKkKlansman, man. Cool. I literally just got off the air doing my show when I had Kevin Willmott on. He was a good friend of mine.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So he told me to tell you to say hi.
Yeah, what up, Kevin?
He answered some of the questions I was going to ask you because I wanted to talk about, you know, the Spike Lee connection, but as he indicated to me, Spike has been around you since you were, like, small. So have a good comfort level with him.
Yeah, I mean, but see, working together is something else. And I got to do a little spot in Malcolm X when I was, like, five or six. I guess I was six. And I said, I'm Malcolm X. I was one of the little kids at the end. I know just the communication in this the true working environment was really new for me. But it was a dream come true. And it was a very natural fit, though. I mean, it felt like family. You know what I mean? And right. That's the environment he creates anyway on set. And even at headquarters at 40 Acres and a Mule, we would rehearse there. And it felt like the Hall of Fame. You know, he had all his posters and all this memorabilia stuff. That was awesome. And you felt like you're a part of that history. You know what I mean? Like you're on his franchise. You're playing for the Knicks or something. You know, I say Knicks because
that's his
squad. You know what I mean? Yeah. So.
So how was it when you first got the script? Because I was talking about, you know, the creation of the script and the screenplay and how bizarre of a story it is. It almost feels like something that if it wasn't real, somebody could have written it this way. So what was your initial reaction reading the screenplay?
Well, because I had read the book before, I wasn't as... It was still, like, reading the script, it made it... I guess I could see now, I got my roadmap of how to get to how to tell this story. Because for one, they got all this information in the book, but then the script kind of narrows it down on which direction we're going. You know, so that once I got a hold of the script, which was later, you know, I got the book months before and then we got the script later. It just added to the excitement and it became more real, you know, like, all right, we're really doing this once I got that script. And then we worked it out. Again, it was very community-like, best idea in the room wins. We were changing stuff, shifting stuff, bringing stuff from the old script back to the new one. So it was a lot of teamwork involved.
So I was just told that, you know, the only instruction that the screenwriters got, that Spike and Willmott got from Jordan Peele, was that, you know, it's a good story, but just find the humor in the story. Don't make it a comedy, but play up the absurdist aspects of the story.
Right.
As you guys are filming it, right, and you know, and like when I went to the screening, you know, people laugh at it, but it's kind of an uncomfortable laugh. It's not, 'cause it's not really funny, but it's like, wow.
Right. I'd say, like, I it's definitely not a comedy. I feel like that'd be disrespectful to Spike, call it that. But, you got to find these moments of absurdity, of this ridiculous behavior or whatever, or what he had to do, this kind of language, this hateful language he had to use to infiltrate, you know? And it's funny maybe because it's coming from a black man's mouth, but it's not. And he was very serious and thorough with his investigation. You know, Ron Starworth don't play. You know, I've got to spend a lot of time with him. So I know it wasn't funny to him, although he does say, like the relationship he established with the Kingpin, David Duke, sometimes the stuff he was saying to him and his response, it would make him laugh. It would make him chuckle. So, I can't believe he pulled this off.
So you just said you had Starworth. You talked to him prior to film. Was he there on set when you got
him? He wasn't there on set. He was there the first day of the table read, first day of rehearsal. Passed around the BlacKkKlansman, the Ku Klux Klan membership card, because he is a member. technically he's a member.
Right.
And he used his real name, and he said he just had a brain freeze on that. He was just in the moment. He just used his real name. But he was so helpful, and he He didn't spare anything. He shared a lot of stuff with me that was helpful to get me into the space and the spiritual space I needed to be to play this man. Because I didn't want to just surface level stuff. In fact, I threw that away. I wanted to get to the pits, you know, to the bottom.
Right. I love the style of the film. And for me, it was almost kind of like a throwback to like Spike's work from like the late 80s, early 90s, that kind of gritty style he uses. There's one particular scene that I love, which was what I call it the power scene, where you had the juxtaposition between the white power movement, where you're there and the bodyguard kind of capabilities, and you got the black power
part. Oh, yeah.
And I was asking about how that was kind of put together, and I was told that was more, not necessarily, even though it was scripted, it's all about how it was edited.
Yeah.
When you had a chance to watch the film, what was your reaction to some of the more dramatic scenes, actually having done them and then watching the final result on print?
I thought about Spike Lee. I thought about Chase Irvin, who shot it. And the phenomenal job Barry, who edited it. I thought about the phenomenal job they did, and what a hell of a team I'm on. You know, how they were able to take. Because it was funny, even talking to Adam about it, I wasn't sure because there was so much, like, from the script. I don't know how they're going to edit this. I don't know what direction we're going to go in. And so seeing how they put it all together, you know, it was emotional for me. You know, I was affected by it, you know, and I found myself just watching the Spike Lee film, not a film that I was in. You know, right. and like you said, it felt like a throwback
right.
Spike Lee joint. You know what I mean? Right. And then I started feeling proud, you know, to be a part of it even more so, more than ever. And like, this is, I don't know how people are going to react to it. I don't know success. I mean, one man measures success is different from another's. But I felt it was successful because of what we did and then seeing the final touches on it. It's great.
So I look at you and your body of work. I watch you on Ballers. I watch a lot of the stuff that you're doing. You're kind of creating your lane. You're doing your thing. What is it what goals do you have for your career? And how do you want your career to stand out, to build your name?
That's it right there, just building my name. If I could get that, let's just do that.
Well, it's hard, man.
Exactly. I mean, I get it. This guy has dominated for a long time, so I get it. But, like, that's why, I mean, I've been reluctant on doing certain, like, press. Like, for the first couple of years of Ballers, I didn't do any press.
Right.
I just wanted people to see the work. You know, I mean, I got to do press now, but I just want the people to respond to the work and see the work, you know. And I'm really at this. I'm chipping away at it. I'm in the lab. I'm just chipping away. I want to keep doing stuff that speaks to me, that tells stories of men and women out here that are going through real things. I want people to look up on that screen and say, I can relate to that. I'm affected by that in any way. You know, they don't have to necessarily like it sometimes, but they were affected. They could say, oh, that was real, though. I know somebody like that, or that is me. You know what I mean? And that's what brings me joy.
So does it make it easier for you, or does it make it harder? Because, I mean, it surely gets you in the door, but then after that, you're on your own.
Yeah, well, I felt like I was on my own from jump. You know,
right.
the Baller situation, he hasn't known about any of the auditions. He didn't know about this until later. So I'm doing it now. I'm trying to carve it out on my own. And does it make it harder? I mean, the work is hard. Acting is hard, period. Rejection is hard. You get rejected a lot. I've been rejected in these auditions a lot. Got rejected in another business, in football, a lot. So I can handle it.
Right.
I know what to do, and I know how to handle it, and I know what I got to do. So, it's hard anyway, father or no father.
Well, you know what, man? It, to me, I see the work that you're doing, right? And it's interesting. I can't wait to see Old Man and the Gun, because I think I'll see it. I think it's going to open in Toronto.
Yes.
But this is your year, man. I mean, and you're showing there, like, these, none of these performances are the same. So these are all a lot of different things. So did Boots Riley reach out to you, man, about your white voice, man, that you used in this movie?
See, I'm glad you said that, because I got to be careful how I respond to this, because I don't necessarily like the white voice. Like, what am I supposed to sound like? I went to private school. I went to HBCU.
Right.
I spent summers in Italy, like, since I was seven. Like, I got a lot. My family's from the South. I go every spring and summer when I was a kid as well to North Carolina. So what am I supposed to sound like? You know what I mean? Like, I when you say white voice, Ron, that was his voice. He didn't put on anything. Now, the words he was using, that was something else. That's again, like speaking Spanish or French, there's a hate language. There's a hate vernacular. So he had to dig into that. But, like, that's his voice. That's how he talks. So he didn't put on a voice. You know what I mean? So I wanted to make sure I didn't do that. you know, in this, this is who this man is. So that's why, again, I wanted to penetrate all that. I mean, that actually, obviously, that has to come with it. But right. I wanted to make sure what made him do this.
Sure, that wasn't a white voice, man. Damn.
Like, yo, I'm saying, listen, I get it. I'm just talking personally.
It's easy. I thought it was hilarious.
One of my favorite lines in the movie is, like, what does a black man talk like?
Right. So,
all right, man. They're giving me the wrap it up signal, man. But I got so many questions. JD, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right.
And special thanks to the ultra cool JD Washington for his insight. We'll take a break right now and come back with more of The Big Show. Keeping it real with Film Gordon. Back to our final segment, and as always, this week's reviews are brought to you by thefilmgordon.com. Experience film through the eyes of a true film addict, me. Check out all of our film content at thefilmgordon.com. Now, this week, there are two films opening in theaters, but before we take a closer look at them, as always, cue the music. This week, two women take a wild adventure around Europe in The Spy Who Dumped Me. Now, in this story, Audrey and her best friend Morgan find themselves embroiled in a major international conspiracy when Audrey's ex-boyfriend unexpectedly re-enters her life with a team of assassins on his trail and reveals that he's actually a CIA agent. Directed by Susanna Fogel and co-written by Fogel and David Ireson, the film stars Mila Kunis, Kate McKinnon, and Justin Theroux. Now, in this clip, the ladies discuss packing protocol on their way to Europe.
I think it looks suspicious if we go through international security with no luggage and just a weird trophy, right?
Wait. Wouldn't it be more suspicious if we go through security with a suitcase that's totally empty except for the weird trophy?
Yes. We need more trophies then.
That's what we'll do. We'll be the kind of women who jet off to Vienna with all of our awards. We're notable. We're recognized. We have trophies, baby.
1 year after meeting the man of her dreams, Drew, Audrey Kunis is celebrating her birthday while lamenting the loss of her ex. There to cheer her up is her zany best friend, Morgan McKinnon, who provides emotional support and what passes for comic relief. Now, after a night of heavy drinking and in a rage, she decides to destroy the remaining evidence of her time together by burning up the little belongings he left behind. After contacting her somewhat occupied ex, Drew, played by Theron, he informs her he will retrieve them in the morning. Before he arrives, Audrey discovers that he's an international spy and there are those searching for him. Now, upon his arrival, he entrusts Audrey with a small trophy to protect while giving her ominous instructions to get it to a rendezvous in, of all places, Zurich in 24 hours, while also telling her, trust no one. Now, before you can say Mission Impossible, our heroines are off to Europe. With no luggage, money, or direction, the dynamic duo lie, cheat, and steal their way across the continent with a group of bad guys in tow, with only their wits and cunnings to survive. Fogel, who directed the indie rom-com Life Partners, badly misfires with nearly every aspect of this story, which features an inept Swiss cheese screenplay with a multitude of holes that both she and her co-writer Ireson struggle to make believable. Too much of the story hinges on the goofball comedic efforts of SNL's McKinnon, who is great in small bursts, but is truly challenged to extend her 5-minute bit into a 2-hour character. Now, much of her dialogue seems ad-libbed and sadly doesn't work. Playing best friends, Kunis and McKinnon have zero chemistry or believability as friends. Ditto for the relationship between the Just for Men hair spokesman, Thoreau, and Kunis, who looks 20 years his junior. Now, the screenplay features stereotypical Russian spies, out-of-place acrobatics, and an unexplained CIA agent who insists on repeating he went to Harvard to anybody who will listen. I'm having the best week of my life, says McKinnon's Morgan. Only if stealing, lying, and killing innocent people is your idea of fun. Now, poor Gillian Anderson, who seems embarrassed, even in sparse scenes she has in this mess. Running an overlong 117 cringeworthy minutes, Fogel has created one of the worst films of the year that is purely disjointed, unfunny, and utterly nonsensical. The latest story of a character with low self-esteem who finds her mojo by abusing others continues a sad commentary on the state of what passes for funny in modern storytelling. Steer away from this train wreck. Unfortunately, I can't say the same. I gave this movie an F. Which brings us to our second and final film of the weekend that we'll review. And that film, of course, is Christopher Robin, which follows the exploits of Christopher Robbins, who has grown up and lost his sense of imagination only to be reunited with his old stuffed bear friend, Winnie the Pooh. Directed by Mark Forster and written by Alex Ross Perry and Allison Schrader from a story by Perry, the film is inspired by A.A. Milne and H.E. Shepard's book, Winnie the Pooh. The film stars Ewan McGregor as the titular character alongside Haley Atwell, as well as voices of Jim Cummings and Brad Garrett. A grown-up Christopher Robbins unexpectedly reunites with his childhood friend in this clip from the film.
What to do, what to do, what to do. What to do indeed. Pooh? Christopher Robin.
No. No, 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 no.
You can't be here. This can't be happening.
Oh, God. Stress.
It's not stress.
God, I'm stressed.
It's Pooh.
So exhausted. Evelyn warned me.
I like to be warmed. Warmed and cozy.
I've cracked. I've totally cracked.
I don't see any cracks. A few wrinkles, maybe.
Now, on the course of being shipped to boarding school, young Christopher Robin hangs out with his childhood imaginary friends Winnie the Pooh, Tigger, Eeyore, Owl, Piglet, Rabbit, Kanga, and Roo one last time as he prepares to leave his childhood behind. Days turn into months, then into years, and now an adult with a wife, Evelyn, played by Atwell, and daughter, Madeline, played by Bronte Carmichael, Robin has lost all sense of imagination and fun as he labors at a dreary luggage company, simply passing the time. He's been tasked with finding cuts in his staff to prevent the company shutting down, and his preoccupation with his job has deeply affected his relationship with his family. While Robin has moved on from his childhood, his closest imaginary friend Winnie the Pooh still pines for his presence. And in search of his friend, Pooh finds himself in London, stirring the echoes of Robin's past. Forster, who cut his teeth in a variety of dramas, infuses his story with a keen sense of adventure and wonderment. From a playful romp through the streets of London to a Spielberg-esque shots in the countryside between Robin and Pooh, Forster displays a keen eye for details that bridges the gap between the ages, making the story relatable to all. The interactions between Robin and Pooh are genuinely tender and brilliantly executed as Robin lovingly befriends the bear with very little brain, but one who possesses a huge heart. Now, all of the voice work of Pooh and crew are very well done, each with distinct personalities, led by Cummings as Pooh and Garrett as Eeyore, who stand out providing plenty of humor and heart in this sweet and cute version of the latest film of this beloved character. Now, unlike last year's Goodbye Christopher Robin, which focused on the creator of the character and the ramifications of his creation, this latest version examines the loss of one's childhood innocence and how, even if you can't go home again, you can at least share those memories with those you love. Now, while this Universal story targets the younger audience, the film resonates with audiences the most. Who can't relate to the loss of their childhood and all of the memories attached to that time? Forrester clearly can, and it has given him the ability to craft a wonderfully touching and sentimental story that will have us all searching for our inner child. Thank you, Christopher Robin. And I gave this film a B+. Really, really did not expect this movie to affect me as well as it did, but I am so, so glad that it did. Well, that's it for us this week. And on behalf of our producer, Jessica Sturgis, we say in closing, please see something good at the movies. Have a wonderful weekend, and we'll see you on the other side. We're out.
Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me. Fuck you and all your expectations. I don't even want your congratulations. I recognize your false confidence and calculated promises. All in your conversation. I hate people that feel entitled. Look at me crazy, 'cause I ain't